The Angel's Mark, written by S.W. Perry and read by Chris Dyer. He lies on a single sheet of fine white Flanders linen, eyelids closed, plump arms folded across his swollen infant belly. He could be a sleeping cherub painted upon the ceiling of a Romish chapel. All he lacks is a harp and a pastel cloud to float upon. The sisters at St. Bartholomew's have prepared him as best they can. They've washed away the river mud, plucked the nesting elvers from his mouth, scrubbed him cleaner than he ever was in life. Now he stinks no worse than anything else the watermen might haul out of the Thames on a hot Lammas day such as this. Male child, malformed in the lower limbs, some 4 years of age. Taken up, drowned, at the Wild Goose Stairs on Bankside. Name unknown, save unto God. So says the brief report from the office of the Queen's Coroner, into whose busy orbit, 12 miles around the royal presence, this child has so impertinently strayed. The chamber is dark, unbearably stuffy. A miasma of horse dung, salted fish, and human filth spills through the closed shutters from the street outside. Somewhere beyond Finsbury Fields, a summer thunderstorm is boiling up noisily. Plague weather, says present opinion. If we escape it this year, we'll be luckier than we deserve. The chamber door opens with a soft moan of its ancient hinges. A cheery-looking little fellow in a leather apron enters, his bald head gleaming with sweat. He carries a canvas satchel, trapped defensively against his body by his right arm, as though it were stuffed full of contraband. Approaching the child on the table, he begins to whistle a jaunty song, popular in the taverns this season. On high the merry pipit trills. Then, with the exaggerated care of a servant preparing his master's table for a feast, he places the satchel beside the corpse, throws open the flap, and proceeds to lay out his collection of saws, cleavers, dilators, tongs, and scalpels. As he does so, he polishes each one on a corner of the linen, peering into the metal as though searching for hidden flaws. He is a precise man. Everything must be just so. He has standards to maintain. After all, he's a member of the worshipful company of barber surgeons, and, while he's here in the Guild Hall of the College of Physicians, a surprisingly modest, timber-framed building wedged between the fishmongers' stalls and bakers' shops to the south of St. Paul's Churchyard, he's on enemy ground. This rivalry between the meat cutters and the balm dispensers has existed, or so they say, since the great Hippocrates began tending patients on his dusty Aegean island. After 2 verses, the man stops whistling and engages the child in a pleasant, one-way conversation. He talks about the weather, about what's playing at the Rose, whether the Spanish will try their hand against England again this summer. It's a ritual of his. Like a compassionate executioner, he likes to imagine he's strengthening his subject's resolve for what lies ahead. When he's done, he leans over the child as though to bestow a parting kiss. He places his left cheek close to the tiny nostrils. It's the final part of his ritual, making sure his subject is really dead. After all, it won't reflect well if he wakes up at the first slice of the scalpel.